Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. Breaking news. CPI skyrockets to 7.5%. A huge headline print. Just for those of you who might have been living under a rock for the last year, the CPI was at 7%. It today shot up to 7.5%, and this exceeded the expectations of the market. So let's dive into the specifics and see how individual asset classes actually responded. And then I want to get into the actual numbers so I can go over the actual changes to the methodology. We talked about that yesterday. I actually did a whiteboard video on it today. And since the BLS came out with the new headline number and the new number for January, they also included their new methodology. So let's just dive into all of it right now. So first, going to CNBC, like I said, inflation surges 7.5% on an annual basis, even more than expected and highest since 1982. For those of you watching this video that have gone to the grocery store or have bought anything in the last year and a half, this should not come as a surprise. In fact, the surprise is that it's only 7.5%. And we're going to get into that in just a moment, how they changed the methodology for how they measure CPI. So how did this affect specific assets? And what we've been talking about on this channel, what I've been encouraging all of you to do is really get hyper-focused on the yield curve. That's what we've got to watch. So we start off by looking at what happened to the 10-year. Well, as expected, let's go to a five-day chart, probably better. The 10-year treasury exploded higher as well. So we finished the day yesterday around, maybe 1.94. And as soon as the CPI number came out, it shoots up to over 2%. Now, this is interesting, but it's not the entire story. Again, we're trying to figure out what's happening to the yield curve itself, not just what's happening to the 10-year, or what's happening to mortgage rates, as an example. So to figure out what's happening to the entire yield curve, or the two points that are most important, we've got to look at what's happening to the 2-year treasury. So let's just say the 10-year treasury went up by around 6 or 7 basis points. So the 2-year treasury, get that number to disappear there, actually went up by a lot more. So the close of the day yesterday, the 2-year was trading about 1.36. And then it shot up not by 6 basis points or 7 basis points, but it shot up by 14 basis points. And it was trading yesterday at the end of the day around 1.36, today up to 1.509. So if the 2-year shot up by 14 basis points, the 10-year shot up by 6 or 7 basis points, what happened to the yield curve? It got flatter. And what you hear in the mainstream media is just the fact that the 10-year treasury went up. But again, that's not the important part of the story. The important part of the story is that the 2-year went up at an even faster rate, or to a greater degree. If you guys haven't watched my videos where I've been talking about this, the reason we need to pay very close attention to the yield curve, and I think that's the most important thing to really pay attention to over the next few months, is going back to the 1950s, every single time we've had an inverted yield curve, we've had a recession. And we have never had a recession without an inverted yield curve. Therefore, when the Fed starts to raise rates, then we've got to pay attention to what the 2-year is doing and what the 10-year, because if we get that inversion, we know the probability of a recession in the next year and a half is extremely, extremely high. And then we would need to look at, we'd need to use that framework to then predict the probabilities of asset prices going down in nominal terms. Talk about the stock market, talk about the housing market, and then we'd need to look at potentially unemployment rate increasing We need to look at all of these factors to try to figure out what we are going to see play out in 2022 and 2023. So huge day in the news today for sure. Let's go back to CNBC homepage and look at how this explosion in the CPI has affected other asset classes, not just the treasuries. So Dow down 130 points. The NASDAQ down 66 points. This doesn't surprise me at all. Doesn't surprise me at all. Because why did the two-year go up? Because the market is predicting or giving a greater, it's attaching a higher probability to the Fed not only raising interest rates, but raising interest rates three or four times. So they're saying, okay, Fed, you're saying that you're hawkish, but now we believe even more than we did yesterday that you are going to be hawkish. And that's what that two-year, the front end of the yield curve, is actually telling us. But then the long end is telling us that, hey, Fed, we don't even care if you raise interest rates. We are predicting that there's a greater chance of a recession than we thought even yesterday. So then NASDAQ, why is that important? Because for those of you who are interested in cryptocurrency, Bitcoin has really been, and most cryptos have been kind of tied to the NASDAQ, or they've been trading right alongside with the NASDAQ as of last few months, going back to November 3rd, when the Fed first announced their tapering program. And that's just when they're reducing the size of the quantitative easing. So VIX up, as you would expect, that is volatility. Let's look at gold. And no surprise here, gold is up $2, only 0.11%. But as you would expect, it is up, all precious metals up, including copper. We go over to oil, no surprise here either. It's up $1.53, up to $91. Well, you've got to put yourself in the position of a politician right now, where you've got high rates of inflation. That is political kryptonite. On top of that, you have oil prices going up, which means that the prices at the pump, and that's what people really, really notice, will most likely be going up into the next couple months, going into these midterm elections. I mean, this is just horrible news for the Democrats for sure. It's good news if you're a lover of freedom and liberty, because that means that there's a very low probability that Biden gets reelected in 2024. And not that I'm in it really political. I dislike both parties equally. But the bottom line is that for the time being, the Republicans are less aggressive, let's say, about the mandates, the restrictions, and all those things that are attacking our freedom and liberty. And let's get into Bitcoin. Bitcoin up, which was surprising to me. Ethereum, XRP, Litecoin, excuse me, down. That is not surprising, because I would expect it to trade with the NASDAQ. Maybe Bitcoin is decoupled from the NASDAQ, and that would make me a lot more bullish short term on Bitcoin. Like I said the other day, I'm waiting to add to my position until I see that decoupling from Bitcoin and the NASDAQ. Why? Because the whole reason I would buy Bitcoin is because it's a non-correlated asset. So why would I buy something that's correlated or is trading in tandem with the NASDAQ or risk assets, especially when we're going into potentially a higher interest rate environment, which would be negative, bearish for the NASDAQ and these high-flying tech stocks. Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist Show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly,
your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalists Live right now and get your tickets today.
Let's get into the details of the changes the BLS made to the CPI calculations. So we can determine, yesterday, my hypothesis is that it would most likely decrease the headline CPI moving forward. In other words, understate it to a greater degree than it's been understated for the last, call it, three decades. It seems, isn't that weird? Every single time they change the CPI methodology, it makes it so CPI is lower in the future. And are we to believe that that's not intentional? Come on. We tried and kid. So let's see what happened to the CPI as of today, or the CPI calculation. This is incredibly fascinating. So I had Josh put together, see if I can expand this. Good. Yes. I had Josh put the two CPI prints, or the detail prints, side by side so we could see the specific changes. Remember, if you watched my video yesterday, they changed the weighting for the CPI measurement. And they did that starting in January 2022. And the print that we got today was for January. So let's start by looking at food prices. And as I said yesterday, I thought that they would change the food prices or the input weights for food. And I got to give a hat tip to my good buddy Andres Steno Larson on Twitter. He was the one that pointed this out. So you can see that food, the weighting went from 13.99 to 13.37. So they're attaching a lower weight to food. I wonder why they do that. Maybe because food prices are skyrocketing. And if they want a lower CPI, they want the inputs that are going up and up and up that add up to the overall CPI calculation, they would want those weights to be lower so they'd have less of an impact on headline CPI. So this is no surprise. That's what we were talking about yesterday. And also what we were talking about yesterday is how they would most likely give a higher weight to food at home, groceries, and a lower weight to food away from home, restaurants. And you can see this is exactly what happened. The food at home went from 7.7 basically to 8.1. Restaurants, 6.2 to 5.2. Why would they do this? Because in my opinion, if we see food prices start to flatline or come down, that's going to impact groceries to a greater degree. Because the groceries that you buy, there's a lower percentage of that price is a result of labor costs. Where restaurants, their labor costs are a very high percentage of their overall. So my point there is that labor costs, they're most likely not going down. They're most likely going to continue to go up. But if we get the supply chain fixed or the supply chains fixed, then you could see groceries start to maybe go down or at least flatline a little bit more or to go up at a slower rate than restaurant prices because, again, those restaurants are impacted to a greater degree with something, a price that's very sticky, and that is wages. So look, let's look at energy. Went from 7.5 to 7.3. Shocker, right? when oil is going up to $90, $100 a barrel, well, let's just decrease the weight for energy and therefore impacting the CPI or making the if we decrease the weight for energy, if energy prices are going up, that's going to have a lower impact on headline CPI. And of course, that is most likely the objective here. So let's go down to another thing that everyone can relate to, and that is vehicles. We've got new vehicles and used cars and trucks. So in December, number 3.8 and 3.4. Now 4.1 and 4.1. So why would they increase the weighting to vehicles? They've skyrocketed, right? But what's the probability of any prices in the CPI right now, in the basket of goods? If you would have to guess which price is most likely to come down, I think the majority of you would say, well, it's going to be cars. Because the reason used car prices are so high is because there's no new car. There aren't any new cars, or very few. And the reason there's very few new cars is because of a chip shortage. Well, they'll most likely get that solved, therefore bringing more new cars online, therefore decreasing the prices of the new cars and the used cars. So I think that's why they pushed the weighting or increased the weighting for vehicles, because out of the entire basket, that's the price that's most likely to come down. Let's go over to shelter. Another thing that's extremely important to all of us. Owner's equivalent rent. And you hear that all the time. What is this? This is just a completely bogus, fabricated number that they just pull out of the sky. Technically, it's supposed to be them calling homeowners and saying, what would you rent your house for? But to tell you how understated it is, in December, if my memory serves me right, they were saying over the last 12 months that housing prices went up by 3.7%. And that's based on this ridiculous number, 3.7%. How many of you think that housing costs went up by 3.7% over the last 12 months? I mean, how many of you have tried to buy a house? Did housing prices just go up by 3.7%? Absolutely not. They went up much higher than that. How about rents? Of those of you on this live stream right now, I'm sure you pay rent. And I guarantee you, your rent has gone up more than 3.7%. In fact, according to Realtor.com, which is just mining the MLS, they say that rents have gone up over 12%. So let's see what they did to owner's equivalent rent as far as weighting with the new methodology. Goes from 23.5 to 24.25. In other words, they increased the weight for owner's equivalent rents. Why would they do this? Because it's a bogus number. They can make the number whatever they choose, whatever they want. They're already doing it. So, and you'll notice they give shelter the highest weighting. So if you give the highest weighting to the number that's most easy to manipulate, this is serving the objective of not just now, but in the future, especially being able to say that consumer price inflation is a lot lower than it actually is. That's the bottom line here. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Always stand up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism.